Welcome back to Quartercast, everybody. I'm Kelsey. I'm here with Joseph Weeks, the owner of Rituals, the new club that's going to be moving into the old wind-up space. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for making the time to do this. I was really looking forward to this.
Oh, thank you. I'm happy to see you.
Yeah, great. So let's get started. Obviously, I want to talk about what you're going to do with the space. This is pretty big news for us in the music community. But to take a step back, tell me a little bit about yourself. I think before we started talking, you said you went to Towson and everything. Are you from Baltimore originally?
I am not, actually. So I have had some baby steps northwardly towards Baltimore since 1999. So I was born in Mobile, Alabama. And I grew up in a place called Daphne, Alabama. And I moved to Richmond, Virginia in 1999. And then I moved to Towson in 2008 to attend Towson University as a vocal performance major and also a minor in Italian. And I didn't really fit in the music program there too much. My interests were pretty varied, and my personality wasn't like the other singers there. So I was into metal and punk and death rock music and also artists like Bjork and PJ Harvey, and I ended up changing my major to Italian studies because I struggled a bit in school just because I was not near my family and didn't really know anyone, hadn't really gotten to the community yet, and so took a few years off and decided to go back to school and finish my degree in Italian studies with a focus on the Italian Renaissance and art history.
Wow. Yeah, that's a really interesting transition. Was there a little bit of culture shock coming here? Like, where did you do most of your growing up? Was that in Alabama or Virginia?
Both. So I was, I want to say 11 or 12 when I moved to Richmond from Alabama. It was culture shock. Very different geography. In Alabama, where I'm from, where I was born, there's a lot of culture developed out of this kind of nautical port city. There's a lot of history there. My family has roots there that go generations.
They still there?
They are, yeah, absolutely. Quite a bit of family down there still. Richmond was really cool because even though it was pretty awkward for me in high school,
for everybody, right?
For sure, but I also was in private schools, in private Catholic schools before, so I went to my first public school in Richmond, and that was very wild for me. Going from a student population of like 300 to 400, where your family knows people who knows other families, is what I'm trying to say, of like the kids who were attending school there, to going to a public school where there's 1,700 students. It was pretty intense for me, and a lack of rigidity, you know, the kind of the confines of Catholicism and
oh, it was Catholic school.
Yeah. And then going into public school and middle school was a lot. And then I actually went to a magnet school in a place called Petersburg, Virginia, Appomattox Regional Governor School.
Okay.
And and I focused in visual arts and fine arts. I was there for painting, and it was, again, like a smaller student body there. And that was cool because I got to, like, get picked up by other friends who had cars in high school. Mm-hmm. We would listen to mixtapes in the car and smoke clove cigarettes. And
all that good. Were you listening to metal and stuff then, metal and punk and all?
Yeah, more so punk. One of my first crushes was Johnny Rotten.
Nice.
But I was also listening to a lot of Bjork and even Radiohead and Fugazi and The Smiths and so on and so forth. So I had like varied tastes, and also was listening to a lot of classical music. At the time, I was training to be a concert pianist, and my teacher had a conversation with me one day where she said, if you can't be dedicated to practicing 4 hours a day, then I really want to kind of tell you to do something else. She was pretty straightforward with me, which helped me figure out what I kind of really wanted to do, or wanted to try to do. And so I decided that I wanted to try singing because I'm really fascinated with what humans can do with their, yeah, with their bodies, with training the human voice and oral skills, or rather aural skills. So I got into singing and got into listening to lots of different types of music beyond punk and goth and pop and kind of like weird indie stuff, and got into world music as well, like Bulgarian women's choir is a kind of thing.
I love that kind of like weird stuff that sometimes, yeah, sometimes I'll just like put random stuff in Spotify, like see what it sounds like.
Exactly. You know,
it's interesting. You mentioned too, the bands that you mentioned first are very present vocally, like Morrissey, DJ Harvey. So that's really interesting. So, but you started on piano. Well, when did you first start getting interested in piano and interested in music?
So when I was in Alabama, my parents are still quite religious, but at the time it was far more rigid, and I wasn't really good at sports. And I essentially was asked what instrument I wanted to try to learn, and I gravitated towards the piano because of the breadth of tonality. So you have, you know, incredibly low tones and very high tones, which it's a very emotive instrument. And taking piano lessons originally was kind of meh about it, but the more I got into it, I discovered that I kind of had a natural knack for it, was able to use improv to kind of play around with themes, tones, just kind of figuring it all out. And my teacher told my parents that I had a talent for it, and that kind of developed into me practicing pretty regularly. And moving on to Richmond, I also continued my studies in piano and did some minor competitions, and had my first bouts of real stage fright.
It's scary.
Yeah,
did that ever get easier for you when you were in the...
Then, no. For piano, you know, you're memorizing these kind of dozens and dozens of pages, and you really have to focus and be able to use your memory to get through these concertos or sonatas. I have a memory of playing the third movement of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata, and I just stopped in the middle of it because I had a memory lapse, and the judge was like, all right, it's cool. Mm-hmm. All right, try again. And then I did it again and then stopped in the same place. And I said, I'm sorry. And I just got up and left.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah. We've all been there.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, jumping ahead back to Towson now. Mm-hmm. So Italian studies, what drew you to that? That's kind of, it seems a little different. You know?
Yeah, for sure. So I was a vocal performance major, and I had a minor and then in the Italian language. And when I took some time off from school, I essentially had a discussion with my parents about how I was going to finish my degree, because I just were like, just, you know, get it done. And I had a meeting with my guidance counselor, essentially, at Towson. And she was actually one of my instructors for my Italian classes. Incredibly graceful, elegant, kind person. And she said, well, you know, you have these courses, and we can essentially utilize your Italian minor and build a major from that. And that was what seemed to be most plausible, so I wasn't going to be in school for another 3 years.
Yeah.
So I took classes that were structured around the Italian culture, so Italian cinema and sculpture and literature, and I focused on the Italian Renaissance because I'm really inspired by that particular period of Italian artists, and graduated in 2015-16.
Who would you say is your favorite?
It's tough, huh? Yeah, so I am also in the food and bev industry, and every time someone asks me, what's your favorite? I say, actually, I don't believe in the idea of favorites. I believe in the idea of moods. But there,
oh, I feel that so hard. Like, yeah, yeah. For me, yeah. Like, what's your favorite band? I don't know.
Right, you know, it really just depends on your mood, and there are so many fantastic masters. But what I appreciate about the artwork, even though a lot of it is very religious, is how intense the depictions of emotion are, even if they're like excessively poised. And what I appreciate most about that art form is it demanding you to self-reflect. And I think that people who are into going out to shows and supporting bands definitely have that quality by themselves. They like to self-reflect and reflect on ideas and morals. And so there's a point of intersection for me.
Oh yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. So you brought up religion again. So you grew up in a religious household. You mm-hmm. said you were studying the Renaissance masters, which mm-hmm. was generally religious art.
Mm-hmm.
I guess just if we can get really into it, get really heavy for a minute, like, yeah. how has religion impacted you in terms of you know, your music and, mm-hmm. and art?
Yeah. I would say that I'm pretty gothic by nature. From a very young age, I was very influenced by the stories of the Bible, and was very devout, actually, when I was a young kid. And to get real, at puberty, I realized that I was a queer person, and it really crushed my perspective on religion, on Christianity, and how it affected people. I'm one of several queer people on my father's side of the family, and had one particular cousin who suffered from having HIV/AIDS, and saw him kind of go through all the processes of that illness. While I don't really believe in God or Christianity, I believe in the power that it had over civilization, and even in our current society, how much power religion has, you know, with, you know, good old Trump in office. And
yeah, every day it's like more and more.
Yeah, it's like, what else is going to come out of the goddamn crypt, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. So would you say realizing that you are a queer person was the main, was it that you couldn't really reconcile that with what religion was telling you?
Yeah, I mean, I was very obviously queer. I was into a lot of very weird things. My parents got cable TV, and I watched a lot of MTV, VH1, and that's actually where I learned about, like, Susie and the Banshees, or the Sex Pistols, or the Ramones. It definitely influenced my worldview. It was like a peek out the window, if you will, because I was in rural Alabama on the Gulf Coast, and there's not a lot of that happened down there. Like, at the time, Bush was really big, and bands like that. So on one side, I was having this religious upbringing and going to Catholic school, and then I was also like watching MTV and kind of getting influenced by that, and also hitting puberty and having all these like strong feelings about things, and definitely felt kind of drawn away from Christian ideals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so what kind of music was in your house, actually, if I can?
Yeah,
yeah,
totally. So a lot of Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Nice.
My mom really liked Phoebe Snow.
Oh, her, I don't know. Is that the similar kind of thing? Like,
no, she's a folk singer.
Oh, folk singer. Okay.
Yeah. And my mother also really loved Eric Clapton. A lot of R&B and funk. And then, so I'm the youngest of three.
Mm-hmm.
My brother and sister were listening to like Violent Femmes. They were listening to Nine Inch Nails.
You did have an eclectic mix.
Yeah.
That's great.
Metallica. My brother was really big into Metallica. Primus.
Nice.
Yeah. So definitely, like the three of us were very much so a part of the MTV generation, you know.
Yeah. And so your first band, was that after you came to Maryland, after you were at Towson? So tell me about that. How did that get together? And now it's not, you're not in that band anymore, right?
I'm not. No, okay. I'm not in that band anymore. We disbanded in 2017, I think.
Oh, recent.
It was called Pellers, and it was a trio. I played synth. My friend Gunnar Isbert played bass, and then Nick Hope was singing and played drum machine. And that was my first band. I didn't have really any interest in being in a band before, mainly because I kind of felt like I wouldn't be good at it, to be honest, and also was in kind of this world of classical music while I was also interested in going to punk shows and metal shows. And it was freaky at first because, you know, it's my first band experience, like collaborating with other people, but we made a thing work for a while.
Okay, great. And so is that how you kind of got familiar with various venues around Baltimore? Like,
yeah, I mean, I'd been hanging out at those spots before.
Yeah, sure.
So
sure.
You know, like probably 2010 on, I was going to Bell Foundry for shows. I was going to the Auto Bar, to Sidebar. I was going to some punk houses in Waverly. I was going to Metro Gallery, certainly, Death Fest. So I was going to shows before I actually started the band.
Yeah, definitely. So, okay, that kind of gets us, unless there's anything else you want to add about yourself, that sort of kind of gets us to the place where we can talk about the most recent news. But is there anything else we may have missed that you think we should know?
No, all let's right. go ahead.
All right. So the Wind of Space closed, and we're sitting here in what's going to be Rituals, which I think is very cool. I know for me and, you know, for people in my band, people in the scene, it was really, really hard to hear that Wind Up was closing, because it was a place where you could have an eclectic mix and it wasn't that hard to get on a bill necessarily, and it was always a good vibe in my experience. So what was your reaction when you heard that was closing?
Well, I knew that it was closing quite a bit before everyone else knew. I was approached probably a week after Russ had talked to Mike Schechter, who owns the building. And I was kind of, I didn't have words for it. You know, it was pretty grim considering the things that we've lost in Baltimore already, and a lot of the DIY venues that have existed for the past like 5 years, maybe at someone's basement or whatever. A lot of them have dissipated. Some because of the city, others just because of them not being able to have that in their neighborhood. It felt pretty crazy. I was quite trepidatious in the beginning of wanting to accept it, but I realized that it was something that doesn't happen very often to people, like maybe once in a lifetime, actually.
Like getting the offer to move into it? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I felt like it made sense. And I knew Russ personally, and had been to the Wind Up Space many times myself for different types of shows. I'm good friends with Wild Honey, for instance, and had seen them play in this space for several years. And plenty of my other friends played the Wind Up Space. My band played the Wind Up Space a few times. And definitely understood deeply how important this space is to not just Station North and not just Baltimore, but kind of the East Coast in general. And I felt, after about 5 hours of really thinking about it, felt like it was a good move.
So when you decided you wanted to go ahead, like, what was going through your head in terms of what you were going to do with, mm-hmm. with rituals? I guess maybe let's start with, where did the name come from?
Yeah. So I was thinking about, what's in a name, right? It's, one's first introduction to the concept of a space. Like, for instance, the Otto Bar, like, Otto was a cat that lived in that space, at the old space where they, you know, named Otto Bar. A pretty kind of non-specific name that people can just kind of be like, oh, yeah, I'll go to that space. And I wanted to have a name that was amorphous, that people could bring their own interpretations to, but that was also a little mysterious. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted something that reflected my own personality. And mind you, I earlier said that I, at my nature, my true nature, I'm quite gothic, and it's true.
Yeah, that fits too, yeah.
Yeah, but I also, knowing that the name would be like, ooh, kind of mysterious and spooky, wanted to, with the core of the space, have a different layer of it, and it not be heavy, to make it into a space that has dynamics between light and dark, and the space itself feels quite different with how the paint is now and with the decor behind the bar.
Yeah, I was noticing. I was going to ask if you'd painted. So for the listener, there's like fairly bright white paint on the wall now. It does make it look a lot brighter, a lot mm-hmm. lighter.
Yes, and then behind the bar there's black. So it's matte black, oh. and there are these very ornate
mirrors,
object and mirrors behind the bar, which helps to make the space feel bigger. But also helps to make the space feel lighter and brighter.
Kind of gothic in the medieval sense. Yeah. Is that what you, okay, that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and it's definitely, it's not going to be a goth bar, but it's, yeah. But yeah, with the name, I wanted to have some curiosity from people, like, okay, well, what's that about, you know? And also there's the real truth of that we have these kind of mundane rituals that we participate in every day that we don't really think about, and other ones that we have that we give quite a bit of importance to, and having that idea applied to this space and like make this a part of your weekly rituals, yeah. if you want, you know.
That's good. And also it's kind of like the name itself, to me, it could evoke like many different things, mm-hmm. like, oh, is this like a club, like a, mm-hmm. a dance club? Is mm-hmm. this like a gay bar? Is mm-hmm. this like a, you know, a martini bar?
Mm-hmm.
So even that, it's kind of like, it leaves you open to what you're getting. But
for
but
sure.
Yeah, so what, explain to people what you're doing with the space. I had someone asking if it was going to be like an art space in the sense of like you can rent project mm-hmm. areas. So it's not quite that. Can you walk us through what it's going to be and what
yeah.
your idea is?
So I want to keep it in the same vein of what Wind Up was, although it will be quite different because, you know, it's a different owner, a different person who's implementing their ideas into the space. But I still want it to be very community-based, and I also want artists to be able to come in and have their art on the walls for an exhibition, and also would love art installation to happen. But it's also going to be a DIY venue, so there will be shows here as well. And I also wanted it to be open as a bar for specific days during the week because I'd heard that, you know, people would love to come more, but it's only really open as a venue. And then, you know, past a certain hour, someone comes up to you and is like, hey, I need $10 for the door fee, you know. And understanding that that can be very frustrating for people, and definitely keeping that in mind and then applying that to, okay, how will that work for a weekly schedule? And so my thought was, all right, well, I'll be open as a bar Sunday or Monday through Wednesday or Thursday, and then have those other days as specific to having shows. And that's kind of the scheduling I'm thinking about having, because I do want this to be a neighborhood bar, but also a venue space, because again, you know, having a place that feels welcoming and that's community based, I think that you need to have kind of both of those needs met.
Yeah, definitely. So you kind of talked a little bit about how it's going to be different from Wind Up. Can you elaborate a little more on your different vision?
Yeah. One of the main ones is that it's will be open as a bar for certain days during the week. The other is that, you know, the decor has changed quite a bit. It's a vast difference from what it looked like before. And even during Pride, I opened the door so that people could see that we were open. And I'm glad that I did, because people started kind of trailing in and seeing what it was all about. But someone walked by and they were like, is this a Wind-Up space? And I said, yeah, it used to be, but now it's Rituals. And they were like, is that the Twin Peaks stage? And I was like, yeah. And they were like, it sucks now. It's gone.
Oh, no.
But, you know, but that was a part of that, you know.
Yeah. I mean, so just for the listener, let's run down. So the stage right now, the floor is still the same with the white and the black stripes, but everything is painted. There's like a gray square. Are you going to like do projections on that? Okay, and we've got a cool Pride flag hanging. Is that just for Pride? Or like
no, it's going to still be hanging in this space. Nice. But yeah, we had it for Pride.
Nice. So I guess you're going to break with that whole Lynch Fest thing, right? Like,
I'm not sure. I'm open to it still, okay. But and particularly to the aesthetics of the stage, you know, like the red velvet drapes, the curtains that were there. The red, like the color scheme that was obviously referencing something very specific, you know, that's gone. And that's what I mean, because, I mean, this space was here for 11 years. Mm-hmm. And there have been a lot of really great times in this space. And I appreciate that. I honor that. And I respect that, because all of those events, those shows, they built the space as it is now. And also, I've inherited a lot of good vibes from those times, from Russell, and I will forever be grateful to him. He's a fantastic person, and you know, without him doing the hard work that he did for a very long time, I wouldn't be where I am today.
Did he take the owl? Was that his?
He did take the owl. He did take the owl. Yep.
Cool. Well, yeah, it really looks great in here. I'm excited when you're officially opened to come check it out. When are you shooting on opening?
So yeah, I'll be open Artscape weekend, Friday through Sunday. Will actually be having an after party for Pimor Art here on Saturday night. And I'll be open full time mid August. I'm starting to put together a whole calendar for September and October, and I'm looking forward to having the first show in the space. You know, like, how exciting.
do you have bands lined up yet, or?
Not exactly, not yet, but I'm in talks for some stuff.
What kind of groups are you trying to get in here, or are you just, like, anybody?
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to whomever, you know, has an idea or, you know, wants to hit me up to book something here. Definitely, like, I'm, you know, I'm friends with the friends in Natural Velvet. They're all great people. I'd love for, you know, them to play and talk to them about some stuff and some other bands. But, you know, obviously I want to focus on the great talent we have in Baltimore. And also have bands from out of town come in and be able to have a great time, a great set.
Great. And so changing subjects just a little bit. So you have experience as a bar manager at Ida B's, right?
Right.
Okay. So you'll have that under control, I'd imagine. Do you have much experience booking bands and running a venue like that? Or are you going to have people help?
Yeah. I did do some booking. I've done some booking throughout the years. Not very heavily. But there will be other bookers here as well. Taking over is pretty crazy, because you suddenly are like wearing a lot of hats at once, and you're like, well, how am I going to figure this one out? But yeah, I mean, I have also been in talks with some other people around town about them booking stuff here. And I also get hit up by people by email and messenger and text being like, hey, can I have the show here? Blah, blah, blah. So yeah, there are lots of people who I'm in talk with about being included with programming.
Now, I haven't talked to many other venue owners. Mm-hmm. That's something that I'd like to do. I mostly talk to bands. I'd like to branch out a little bit. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me, like, can you talk to me about, like, the diversity of venues in the sense of, like, you know, you're a queer person. Mm-hmm. Are there other owners that you know of that also, like, represent that demographic?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're comfortable talking about that, I don't want to put you on the spot.
No, you're cool. I think that definitely, especially in the DIY scene in Baltimore, there's a heavy focus on how important diversity is and how important it is for all voices to be heard. Certainly, Metro Gallery is fantastic about that. Sarah Werner is one of my favorite people. And she makes sure the programming reflects diversity, which is very important.
Yeah, you see that there for sure.
I mean, the Auto Bar is very much so invested in that as well. The Crown, and also being a queer person of color, being a black queer man, you want to see spaces that, you know, embrace not just punk or not just indie rock, but also hip hop and also rap. And it's important to have those outlets, especially considering how political our history is in Baltimore and how political it still is.
Now, if you bring that up, if I can ask, so I've talked to some black artists that have really pointed out that there is this sort of segregation in the Baltimore music mm-hmm. scene, like, you know, not necessarily somebody actively enforcing it, but it's just like different circles.
Right.
So is that an issue that you've thought about? And if so, like, is that part of your, agenda? That's not the right word. Part of your plan for rituals?
Yeah. That's a great point. I think that, historically Baltimore is segregated. Mm-hmm. It is ingrained, in certain parts of the city still. You see it in real estate, and also you see it in communities of artists, unfortunately. And it would be a mistake not to point it out and to deal with it head on. I see programming, again, at Metro, at the Crown, that really focuses on diversity, especially at the Crown. A lot of folks of color and queer folks of color have focused on the Crown. Because of them being like, yeah, like, we hear you, we see you, and I want to do that as well. And I think it's my responsibility as a black queer man to have that available to other people of color and other queer people.
Yeah, that's great. That's something I'd love to see, like, just mm-hmm. just places where everyone can feel welcome and comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to name any names, but there are places, certain venues that have definitely turned a blind eye to their lack of diversity.
I mean, if you want to call them out, I'm not gonna do that to you.
But I mean, there are many, there are many variables in that equation, you know, like, there's the real truth of white fear and how that affects some things.
For sure. Well, to get to a little lighter note, I asked people for, like, listeners for some questions.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them you already asked, so this isn't going to, like, necessarily be, like, an artist workspace. So we covered that. We talked a little bit about, like, what kind of shows you'll be hosting. We covered that. So Mike Wallace from Queen Wolf, he wanted to know what's going to happen with the stage. Mm-hmm. You talked about how it looks different, but before we were recording, you mentioned you might make some adjustments. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so the stage as it is now, the space has a lot of square or rectangular feelings. And what I mean by that is like it's just the boxiness of it. And so with the stage, it essentially, if you're sitting in a certain part of the bar, you can't see the stage. And also, if you're performing and you're even at the very front of the stage, you can't see a certain portion of the bar. So I'm going to build out the stage in a half circle to alleviate that. And that is pretty much the only changes that I'm planning on making to the stage thus far. And then kind of general things for the space, I'm going to be building a green room. We talked a little bit about that earlier. I think it's important to have a green room, especially if you want touring bands in your space. That way they have, you know, a moment of reprieve to really kind of chill out and relax, like do whatever they need to do before they play a set. And also it allows for them to kind of feel removed from the chaos of a show. And it's pertinent that spaces have a green room. And not every space can afford that. And I realize that. And I realize that it's a luxury, but it's a luxury I like to provide for bands.
Are you thinking of making like the room where people usually stash equipment? Like, are you thinking of making that a green room? Is that the?
There's actually quite a bit of space in the back of this building. It's quite amazing, actually. At some point in the past, there was a church in the very back of the space. Yeah, there's a hidden bowling alley in a level upstairs somewhere.
That's nuts. I had no idea.
It is nuts. It is amazing here. But yeah, I'm going to build in that area. And I'm in talks with a contractor about developing that part of the space for a green room.
Oh, very nice, very nice. So Mike had another question. Will you grow a beard like Russell? Now you have a beard, but
I don't know if I would be able to grow the rest beard. I mean, I hope that one day when I'm an adult and finally grown that it'll happen, but we'll see.
And has he been helping you out like with your planning and some of the prep work you've been doing?
None of the planning and the prep work per se, but he's been available to answer any questions.
Oh, that's good.
Just kind of giving me little pointers about, you know, this thing and that thing. And yeah, he's definitely been present.
That's great. So this might be kind of tough to answer now, but like say 5 years from now, what do you see Rituals being? What's the longer term vision? You talked a lot about what you're doing now.
Mm-hmm. The longer term vision is to exist as a space and bar that, and like I said, serves the community, keeps the community in mind. Thinking about, and I've been talking a lot about this, the DIY scene 6-7 years ago was pretty different for some obvious reasons. There was really a certain era of bands that were getting started or were on the precipice of taking off. And now they're doing their thing. And Baltimore is kind of waiting for the other bands that will show up and do the same thing. And I think that Rituals will be a space that will help participate in that. And I look forward to making memories in this space with people, with friends, and friends I haven't met yet, and bands I haven't met yet. And also, from a neighborhood standpoint, you know, Hamden has changed quite a bit. It's very, very different than what it used to be. Charles Village is very different than what it used to be as well. Remington has been developed. And when you think of Baltimore, you think of, like, quirk.
Yeah.
You think of, like, a very specific energy. And I think that Station North is retaining some of that quirk, you know. And certainly is present throughout the city, but things have just changed, and we're all dealing with that.
What are your thoughts on Station North? Because it is changing so quickly. Like, you know, venues are going up, venues are coming down. Like, there's the city's planning projects for here. Then I don't hear about it for a while. I don't know what's going on. So, for this particular neighborhood, like, what are your thoughts on the changes?
I was having a conversation with another venue owner a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, and we were talking about what's going on and also what's been going on for the past, like I said, 6-7 years in the DIY scene. And she was explaining it to me like this, and I hadn't really thought of this perspective, but which is silly of me, but it's important to have many options around, because when there are more options, there are more people. And then when there are more people, there are more bands that will be willing to come into town who will be like, oh, let's stop in Baltimore. And sometimes Baltimore is overlooked, I think, which is unfair.
Especially for bigger bands.
So, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And my goal is to be able to help get those bigger bands in and collaborate with other venue owners. And I have lots of ideas. But, yeah, I think that now is the best time to really settle down with some ideas about how to collaborate with other people in the community. I'm a big believer in that whenever there's a political climate that's pretty tough, people get down in the trenches about things, and it's really hard to just be able to want to go out and do things. And I think that people are feeling this new energy of just wanting it to be done, like get this period of time, this era over with. You know, everyone's really tired of it, and people are really just kind of stark raving mad for change and for newness. And I think everyone's itching to reconnect on a certain level with certain ideas of interconnectivity and coming together with people and thinking about old times and how do we get back to those times and how do we, you know, retracing their steps and trying to figure things out again. And I'm definitely also in that state of mind.
Yeah. It gets exhausting. Sometimes you just need to go to a really good show to re-energize.
Right. And that's, you know, that's...
Or enjoy a nice drink at the bar with your friends.
Certainly. Like, you know, drinks in moderation, all is cool. But I definitely have been to a number of shows in the city, which really changed me as a person. And that's why I'm still involved and dedicated. And I know quite a number of people who feel the same.
Oh, hey, so this is going to be open as a bar for most of the week. Do you have any, like, special drinks you have planned?
So I was thinking about, where I draw influence. One of the venues that I drew influence from was St. Vitus in New York, in Brooklyn. And this isn't by any means a bar and venue that looks exactly like it or has the same vibe, but it was just a place that I was thinking about, and they don't do specialty cocktails. It's just like, you know, it's a bar. It is what it is. But, you know, I have a background of being a high-end craft cocktail bartender and was like, oh, well, you know, do I want to bring that concept to the bar as well? As of right now, not necessarily, but I definitely want to offer, like, oh, you can come, like, have a Manhattan, and the person knows how to make you a Manhattan or an old-fashioned or... you know, a Negroni, or also thinking about how the industry has grown. I mean, there are things like, for instance, Mezcal. You know, we have Clavel up the street, and Lane Harlan, what she does has definitely, you know, affected drinking culture in this city, and I would argue in other big cities on the East Coast. And so you have to be cognizant of that, like, okay, well, I have to offer these things as well, especially considering the other bars in the city. Being knowledgeable is being competitive.
Yeah. And so in the larger sense, like, what do you think is going to set Rituals apart from the other bars and music venues? Mm-hmm. Like, what's significantly special?
Well, firstly, it's definitely the decor and the name. secondly, it's the folks who I'll be have working here. Also, I bought a pool table.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which I'm going to have here as well. For booking and programming, I'm excited about the ideas that I have, which I think will definitely set me aside from other spaces, but also including the visual arts in this space. I think everyone has like a, oh, well, you know, here's such and such artist, and you can buy it, you know?
Yeah.
But I think... really having a space where artists can showcase their work, and it can really be focused on that and not as like a a side note, which is one of the reasons why I painted the walls the way that I did. I have quite a few friends who are professional artists, who are painters, and thinking about like what they would want in a space and talking to them about that, and also talking about the idea of versatility in a space. Because I think that for a number of years, it's in order to be successful, many businesses were niche, and we're out of, I think, we're out of that era of like you being super successful if you're niche. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to be inclusive and really embrace the idea of versatility.
Oh, that's good. That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. So I guess I'll wind things up and let you go. But before I ask the last question, is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you think people should know about or anything else you want to say?
No, I think we kind of covered everything, and I hope that all of your listeners feel welcome and are curious to come see the new space.
Oh, yeah, I know. Everybody that I know is, like, really excited to see what happens. So I always ask the same question when I end the show, and that is, like, what advice would you have for other bands? But since this is more of a venue, I'm going to adjust it. So what have you learned in this process of owning a venue, getting it ready? What have you learned that you think people might learn from? Like,
I think I've learned a lot about organization, certainly. I've learned a lot about reviewing my life and all the contacts that I have, because one of the first things I did kind of mentally when I accepted this was, fuck, okay, how does this work? How do I do this? And then I started piecing together all of my experiences in the scene and thinking about the people that I'd met. And I told people bit by bit as well, which started a little bit of kind of chatter and my social circles and people being like, so what are you going to do here? And what do you think about that? And so what I've learned is that when you're in a position like this, you have all this history behind you that relates to what you're doing currently. You know, it's like I have built some really powerful friendships in the city with people like Katrina Ford of Celebration, who I see as like a spiritual mother, really, to be honest with you. She has given me a lot of guidance, and I care for her deeply. And thinking on these relationships and how they've built me and made me into the person that I am, it's very much puts me in the perspective of being an adult. You know, that's the only way I can really say it, is you have these moments of seeing, you know, all these things connect, and also seeing how this position really is changing my life and changing my future. It does have its challenges, but also has a lot of potential, and going into it with the headspace of having a strategy and sticking to your guns, I think is the best way to approach it. Great. So you don't get swayed one way or the other.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time, Joseph. This was a great talk, and I'm super looking forward to when Rituals opens.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much for Joseph for coming on the show. Isn't he an interesting guy? Aren't you excited to check out Rituals? If you're listening to this when it goes up, it'll be open. That soft opening for Artscape is going on, and then it'll be officially open soon after that. Before I let you go, just real quick, Santa Labrada has a show coming up August 30th at Sidebar. It's going to be with friends of the show Holy Fingers, friends of the show Queen Wolf. We're also going to have 10 Million Spiders, and the Audrey 2 is going to be coming down from Pennsylvania. So again, Sidebar, August 30th, doors at 8, music 8:30. Hope to see you there. And thanks so much for tuning in again. See you next time.